This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
Everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Terror Tuesdays here at the Cinema Recall Podcast, only at thatmomentin.com. I am your host, The Vern, and instead of doing a review of a single movie, which I have been doing for the last few episodes, I decided to change formats a little bit and bring on a guest, not to talk about one movie. No, we want to talk about several iconic moments in horror films, horror suspense films, and to help me out with this new type of show, I have with me the Zombie TD Podcast. Hello!
Hello!
Yes, now, if you're not familiar with the Zombie TD Podcast here, you can listen to her on iTunes and SoundCloud, but she actually does do an amazing job of reviewing different horror films. I really love her, like, behind the scenes. I recently listened to her episode on Gremlins, talking about all the different, but you know what, I'm gonna have her explain her podcast and her show. Yes, Zombie TD, please tell the listeners about your show and everything you do.
So firstly, thank you. That's actually really sweet to hear. I do two episodes a week where I talk about a film per episode, and then on the last Friday of each month, I do a behind-the-scenes episode. My last one was actually on the TV show Stranger Things, which I don't know if you guys have heard of.
Yeah.
You know. But
I would say to hear that episode, but I haven't gotten caught up on all the seasons yet, so I gotta wait on that.
Yeah, I do actually admit I haven't got around to watching season two yet.
Oh, so it's just on season one. Okay, I might listen to that episode.
Yeah, so I don't put spoilers in the behind the scenes episodes. But I do put spoilers in all my other episodes. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then you recently wrote an article about the, I'm going to paraphrase here, I'm going to be bad about that, about the top themes in horror films, like the top cliche themes in horror, not cliche themes, but the most, like, great ways to write about horror films. You talked about, like, Jeepers Creepers, and you talked about Drag Me to Hell.
What was that article? I did a top five worst decisions in horror films.
That's what it was. Okay, something like that. Yeah. Okay.
So that was fun to revisit, but also quite stressful because of the amount of stupid decisions there are.
Yes, I bet so. but no, there was like another one here too. It was called "What Are the Three Ingredients to Making a Good Horror Film."
Oh, yes, no, yes. I'm currently putting up, I used to write on creators.co, but they're actually, they're disbanding by at the end of the month. So I'm putting up some of my articles from that profile onto my website. So, yeah, one of them, that particular article was actually for a competition. And the way around I thought I'd do it is, because I feel like everyone's got sort of different opinions on what scares them and what doesn't scare them. So I was like, I don't really feel there's any sort of key ingredients that every horror film has to have in order to make it good or to scare you. So I thought a better way around to do it was just to go through what my top five horror films were and see if they had any sort of similarities or anything that connected all of them, and go that way around.
Yeah, now I'm kind of curious here. Why did you choose the third Final Destination movie as your favorite?
It was the first one of that franchise that I watched, and the opening premonition, which is the roller coaster crash. I love roller coasters, but every single time you get strapped in, you get the harness on, the seatbelt on, there's always that thing at the back of my mind, like, what if something goes wrong? like, I don't know, like, what if it derails or something breaks or... I don't know why. I've always had that little sort of worrying thought at the back of my mind. But my love of roller coasters kind of overshadows that. So I don't... It doesn't take over. So to see that... that my fear basically projected onto the screen was quite effective for me. So I think that's why I remember that one the most.
Okay.
So fair. Yeah.
Fair enough there. Roller coasters. Okay. All right. I get it. All right. Fair enough there. I don't know. I was going for like the second one for some reason. I don't know why. I think the second one's probably my personal favorite of the series right there. I like all the Rube Goldbergian themes of that one the most. But yeah, I will agree that the opening roller coaster sequence of the third one was an amazing opening. Alright. Yeah. So Zombie TD, we are gonna get into our list of our top 5 iconic moments in horror films, and we are gonna get to that right away, but first we're gonna play a few ads from some other great podcast shows, and then we'll be right back, alright?
We'll return after these messages.
Alright guys, so we need to record our top 3 reasons why you should listen to French Toast Sunday podcast.
Number 3 should definitely be our diverse opinions.
Number 2 should probably be our top 3 lists that we do every week.
No, it's gotta be Mark Wahlberg.
What about Gwyneth Paltrow's head?
It's gotta be Fighting the Sadness in the Swamp of Sadness.
Full Frontal.
Stories about being lost at sea.
Brendan Fraser being underground.
Helen Mirren's boobs.
Baltimore accents as heard in The Wire.
Wunderklaus.
Crepes.
Character studies.
Wait, guys. What about movies?
No. Tree rape.
Hmm.
Tree rape? Yeah, I like tree rape.
Tune in every Friday for a new episode of French Toast Sunday podcast, brought to you by us at FrenchToastSunday.com.
Clothing made out of Burger King wrappers.
I'm Clint.
And I'm Jared.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Alcohollywood,
your source for inebriation,
which you're not listening to right now because this is just a promo for a weekly podcast on all kinds of movies, new, old, good, bad.
Yeah, especially bad.
Plus, we invent a cocktail and a drinking game inspired by each film.
And sometimes we make jokes. Not this time, but sometimes.
Subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher and check out the whole shebang at alcohollywood.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Cinema Recall Podcast. We're going to talk about our favorite iconic moments in horror films. I'm going to start with you, Zombie Kitty, for our number 5, all right? What do you got?
Okay. I've kind of done this a weird way around, because how I've done this is I haven't done it in sort of in terms of how iconic each scene is and going up and up and up. I've kind of done it with my reactions to it and what my favourite ones were.
Okay.
So I've kind of done it a bit weirdly. But my number 5 is in Ringu, which is the original Ring, and it's when Sadako comes out of the TV at the end of the
film. I have this down as an honorable mention there, but yes, that is a great moment. Yes.
And it's one of those things where I knew about it before watching it, but still seeing it, it's done so well, because it's not like, you know, a jump scare or anything. It's very sort of, what's the word? Like, not subtle, but very sort of fairly calm in a weird way, you know, in a very weird way, when it should be like, look at this, and it's really not. But that's what makes it weirder.
Here's the thing, too. I mean, that sequence comes at the end of the film. Now, for listeners out there that don't know what The Ring is about, it's basically about this videotape, and when people watch it, they get a phone call saying that they're going to die in 7 days. And then you have this reporter. She's investigating things about it. She finds out that her son watched the video. So now she's doing everything to kind of solve the mystery of this video, because if she does that, she can save her son. And then, spoiler alert, you find out that there's a little girl that's involved in this video who got trapped in a well, or killed and thrown down a well by her evil father. And at the end of the movie, the reporter solves the mystery, and it seems like the spirit is free and everything. And then in this sequence that Zambikini's talking about, her boyfriend is at home or gets home and the video's playing. And when he's watching it, he sees this girl crawling out of a well in this like open field area. And then slowly she crawls towards the screen. And then when she comes out there, then she's able to actually manifest herself into the real world. And what made that scene scary for me is that they showed the scene before, but she never actually made her way to the TV screen. And the fact that she comes out of it, it just, like, the way it is framed, I don't know why, it's just this really creepy girl, wet hair, black wet hair coming out of TV screen. Fuck, it's scary, alright? I can't.
Yeah. And, like, even with that particular scene, because the last time that you mentioned, like, she goes towards the TV and then it sort of cuts or shuts off.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Each time, because it takes her a long time to get there. So when she does, when it does get to the point where she crawls out of the TV, you're still expecting it to, you know, shut off or be, you know, that's it. Mm-hmm. So you're not expecting her to actually physically crawl out of the TV, like going right up to the screen and physically crawl out.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's quite surprised when it does happen.
Oh, I just like, I know the way that you're somehow TV fantasy mixing with reality. Yeah, no, I really enjoy the one. Now, I like the fact that you picked Ring You over the American remake, The Ring. And I have to say, the American remake of The Ring is probably the only time they did Americanization of a Japanese horror film and actually did it some justice.
I was going to pick that, but because I think the way that they did that scene as well was still fantastic. I don't know, for me personally, I think the original one was more memorable. Because I think the remake one, I don't know, there's something about it that isn't, I personally don't think is quite as scary. I think the original.
I agree. I think it's like a little bit too glossy.
Yeah.
No, I didn't want to interrupt you there. You were.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you say it's quite glossy, but what I like about the remake at the same time is that when she does crawl out of the TV, she's still sort of, like, she's sort of glitching and, like, sort of, what do you call it? I want to say she looks a bit sort of digitized, and that's probably the wrong word to use, but she's sort of quite glitchy and...
Oh, okay.
Which I think is still quite a cool effect to use, which they don't use in the original one. But I think the original one, for me, is a lot more memorable.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the original one, and this is what I have too, this is a problem I have whenever they do like an American adaptation of a Japanese horror film, is that the Japanese version always seems a little bit more gritty. Like, the environment on screen seems a little bit more gritty, and there's something dark and foreboding, and the environment, just that makes it scary. But whenever I see an American adaptation, it becomes very, like, glossy, and you can tell it was done with expensive cameras. And I still have Ring You on VHS. And I watch it on VHS because the characters on screen are watching VHS, and there's something about that grainy quality of VHS that just works for me.
Do you get a phone call afterwards?
No, I do not. I love that choice for you, okay? So that's your number five. My number five, and all right, this one is kind of tough to do because I didn't want to just do favorite kills or graphic moments right there. I want to do moments that build suspense. A little bit of suspense and a little bit of dread. Yeah, there's going to be some kills here and there, but I just didn't want to do just goriest horror scenes. So for my number five, I'm going to do the very last sequence and Let the Right One In when the bullies are there at the pool. And they are basically tell Oscar that he has to breathe underwater. So if you don't know Let the Right One In, it's about this boy named Oscar, Swedish movie. And he gets picked on a lot. He makes friends with this vampire lady named Lena. And they become friends. But there's these asshole bullies that Oscar has to deal with. And in one earlier sequence, he stands up to one of the bullies. The bully's brothers finds out about it. And while Oscar's at a pool, he holds a knife to Oscar saying, "Look, buddy, if you can hold your breath underwater for like 5 minutes, I'll let you go. But if you can't, I'm going to cut off your eye," or something like that. And he holds him underwater. And we get this beautiful shot of Oscar underwater. And you're seeing the arm holding him there. And then in the background, you start hearing all these screams. And then you see this one guy go into the water, and he's going past him. And then you see some heads getting chopped off and going into the water. And then the same hand that was holding Oscar gets chopped off and is laying in the water. And then Oscar gets submerged from the water. And then you just see Ina's eyes. But it's got these little triples of blood. I just love the fact that the whole sequence just is done in kind of like one take. And you get all this horrific violence, but we never see any of it. I don't know, Zombie Kitty, are you familiar with this movie?
I am familiar with it. That scene does ring a bell. I have to admit, I've only seen the original film once. Okay. And it was a while ago, but that scene does ring a bell. But I quite like those kind of things. Again, like, you're not seeing the whole picture. So yeah. You're first thinking, what the hell is going on?
There's been other sequences in that movie, too, where the vampire lady, girl, or boy, or whatever, she does have some, like, attach someone. But it's always kind of done in the background. You know she's a vampire, but it's just all kind of subtle, their attacks. And this one, they could have done something really brutal by showing this vampire, you know, ripping people's heads off and everything. But to me, it's just a little bit more scarier when it's, like, subtle like that. Mm. And that's why I picked it as my number five, as being a really good, iconic moment. Just basically Oscar in the pool. Because everything, like I said before, is just done in one frame shot right there. They don't do, like, cuts and edits to different parts of the pool. And that's what makes it iconic for me.
But the film's, that scene's also, because it's not showing the whole thing, it's letting your imagination connect the dots as well. Which sometimes can make it scarier as well, like what you were saying, like it's more subtle, which can make it scarier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I really appreciate that one here. I don't think the director, I'm not going to do justice in pronouncing the guy's last name, but it's Thomas Alvarsson. I don't think he has made another good movie as good as he made this. And speaking about Let the Right One In, I was also going to choose the car sequence from Let Me In, which is the Americanized remake. I was going to choose that one because there's a great sequence when, the vampire child in this one here, she has a guardian who collects blood for her. And in the American remake, there's a great sequence when he's trying to, escape from the cops. Or actually, no, the scene where he's hiding and he tries to drug a guy in the front seat of the car and it goes wrong and the car flips over. And it's just a really great shot sequence in there, too. So I was going to choose that one. But we're not, so I'm going to move on to you, Zombie Kitty. What is your number four?
Okay, so my number four, again, like, I with this one, before I say what it is, like, I wish that I didn't know what was going to happen, you know, the first time watching it. But at the time, because I got told by my dad what was going to happen in this particular scene in this film. So watching the scene, I kind of knew what to expect. But that is in the first Alien film with the chest burster.
Oh. Oh.
And I put it as number four because I already knew what was going to happen. So, I don't know, I kind of went in with expectations and, you know, with the knowledge already.
Okay. So you wait. How did he tell you about it? I mean, did he just say, "Look, there's going to be a sequence," or not? Like...
I can't completely remember. I was quite young at the time. I think we were talking about films that we liked and sort of like moments, like sort of famous moments or moments that we liked. And my dad was telling me it kind of just got around to him talking about Alien. And at the time, I was not into horror films at all. I was easily scared. And, like, my dad said, like, this was the moment that no one knew it was going to happen. So, and he was like, this is the moment where that probably scared him. It was just kind of a conversation that came around to talking about that scene. But what I also like as well is that, I mean, if people don't know this, is that the rest of the actors didn't know what was going to happen. In the script, it's described as, I think in the script it says, like, oh, it emerges, and that's it.
Yeah, they don't actually tell them where it emerges from. I should let listeners know, too, if you're not familiar with Alien and why you're not, why the hell are you listening to our show? Because it's a classic. So the Alien is about this mining crew in space called the Nostromo, and they get a distress call from this planet, and they have to go investigate it, and then a few members investigate the planet. One of them finds some AIDS, and he's like, hey, AIDS, let's go take a look at this stuff, all right? And he sees a movement go around there, oh, movement, that's cool. And then, bam, giant things attaches to his face, and it won't come off at all. And the other crew members don't know what the hell to do. They try to slice it off. Got asked for blood. They're like, fuck, man, what we're going to do? But the thing just comes off, and everything's fine, and then everyone's just eating dinner, and then one of them doesn't feel so good, and spoiler alert, yes, a giant creature comes out of his stomach, and...
The first thing that I'm going to do when I get back is to get some decent food.
I can dig it, man. I'm telling you, I'm eating bird's food and this, but then it tastes better, you know what I'm saying?
The other one over there.
You pound down the stuff like this.
Uh-huh. And I'd rather be eating something else, but right now I'm digging food.
You just know you know what it's made of.
I know that. I don't want to talk about what it's made of. I'm eating this. What's the matter? The food ain't that bad,
on,
baby.
You chill.
What's wrong? What's wrong?
What?
Oh, God.
Yo, but I gotta say this. Before I ever saw Alien, I saw the movie Spaceballs.
Oh, yeah. Hello, my lady. Hello.
Yes.
Oh, no, not again.
Yes, that was my first introduction to the whole chest burster thing. I had no clue what that was about. And I finally did see Alien just a few years later after seeing that. And I gotta say, even though I knew the out, I knew it was gonna happen.
Yeah.
But I didn't know when it was going to happen, because all the clips I saw of the original was, you know, when it was actually happening. What I still liked about watching the movie is that even though you know it's going to happen, I still don't know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, because everything's so calm. Even when they're eating dinner, everything just seems normal. And then sort of John Hurt starts coughing and they're like, are you okay? Are you okay? So, and you're just thinking, oh, maybe he's, you know, he's got something stuck in his throat or something. And then it just gets worse and worse. And you're just thinking, what is going on?
Yeah.
What's happening? and then that.
Yeah, I like reading about two old, no one knew what was going on. And you can see it in some of the tapes too, especially Veronica Cartwright. Her reactions are really genuine right there. Everyone's reaction is really genuine. But her the most. Actually, the scariest scene in that movie for me.
Yeah.
And it's the one when Ash, the android robot there, he starts going haywire.
Oh, yeah, and they destroy him.
And he tries to kill Ellen Ripley, thought that was just because that one, I had no clue that he was an android.
Yeah, that one I had no prior knowledge of. So that one even surprised me as well.
Yes, I was like, whoa, what, he's an android the whole time there? You know, oh, jeez. But let's say he's like, why can't I remember the guy's name now? Ian Malcolm, I think. I know he was in The Hobbit. I can't remember his name.
I can't remember his name as well.
Listeners, if you know this, please let us know this. And I'm playing fucking up right now. I apologize. I know he's in a lot of the Lord of the Rings movies. He played Bilbo Baggins in those right there. Crap, our listeners are like screaming at the computer right now. All right.
Ian Hope.
Ian Hope. Thank you. Thank you. I know it's Ian something right there. Ian Malcolm's the mathematician in Jurassic Park, all right?
Sorry?
Ian Malcolm is the Jeff Goldblum character in Jurassic Park.
Park, yes.
I'm confused here.
Yeah.
All right.
I knew it was Ian something, but I couldn't remember what the last name was.
Yeah, Ian Holm. Yeah. All right, so down to my number four. We're going to choose the... I'm going to choose the opening for John Carpenter's 1978 Halloween.
Yes.
Everything's done. Well, first of all...
I was debating whether to put this on my list or not.
Okay. Well, first of all, you have the brilliant theme, the iconic theme, that credit sequence with just the pumpkin sitting there, that theme, we all know the theme very well. It's really scary. And when you can creep me out in the opening credits, you got me.
Yeah.
And then we get this beautiful POV shot that looks like it's all done in one take.
Yeah.
Where you see this big house, and then you see the camera moving towards the window, and then you see this guy looking at this couple, and they're getting ready to have sex, and they go upstairs, and... the killer made his way in through the house and grabs knives and everything and made his way up the stairs, grabs a mask, puts it on his face, sees the lady. She calls out, Michael, no, and he stabs her. And then he makes his way out to the front porch. A car pulls up. Someone walks over to him. takes off the mask, and it's revealed that it is a 6-year-old child that just committed the stuff. Now, when you watch the movie, and you see the hand reaching for things, yes, those are actually adult hands. I believe that was producer Deborah Hill reaching for the knife, and there's some sequences where it is John Carpenter's hands put on the mask, so it looks like it's going to be an older man killer, but the fact that it was revealed to be a kid, I found to be very kind of terrifying because it switched up my expectations. And I love it when movies do that. I love when movies kind of change your expectations of things. You think it's going to be one thing, and then it completely changes it. There are other iconic moments I could have put in this movie, but I still think the opening holds up. And if a scene could be its own short movie, that works for me.
Yeah. I think that's what's so surprising, like you said as well, is that it is a child. Because you're expecting it to be an adult the whole time, and then that reveal happens at the end. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I like the fact, too, that in the original, the family is like this looks like a normal suburban family.
Yeah.
You know, unlike like Rob Zombie's version, where you know right away that kid's gonna go crazy. In the original movie, we really had no clue of why Michael Myers moved crazier. But in the Rob Zombie version, it's clear within the first minute of that movie. In fact, if I was Michael Myers, I would just kill everyone right there, right now. All right. Yeah,
the Rob Zombie one, kind of, from what I remember, it gave an explanation or gave implications as to why he turned evil. And like you said, what's so good about the original one is that you don't, like, there's no explanation as to why he could have, you know, gone on a murdering rampage.
Yeah.
Or a murder spree. Like, there's no reason for it or no explanation as to why that is. And that's what can also be scary as well.
Very much so.
Hmm.
I mean, because, like, Michael Myers in the original one, he seemed to have, like, a good home. Nice house right there. His parents seemed to be very well off and rich and whatnot there, and the house seemed to be like a clean house. I imagine this family was doing very well, and to have their kid suddenly go crazy, yeah, that's just it. But I feel like in a weird way too, that movie kind of mirrors some of the events that have been happening. Vegas shooting, all the other church shootings. I mean, of just people just going randomly insane and for really no reason, and I find that shit to be terrifying. And
yeah.
I think Rob Zombie's version, right from the first minute of the parents yelling and everything like that, the kid crying, I'm like, you know what? I totally get it. I would totally start killing people if I had to live in the house, all right? If I had walked through the door and I saw that happening, I'm like, hold on, folks. I gotta get my Michael Myers mask because you're gonna die now, alright? You are horrible people.
But that one, you have a reason, and it's just like, that kind of takes away from the scariness of it, the terror of it.
Yeah, it definitely removes like some of the mystique of the character. Yeah. So, what do you have for your number three?
From 28 Days Later... It's the scene where Cillian Murphy is walking through empty London. So,
okay.
Have you seen this film?
It's been a long, long time since I've seen it. So I do remember that sequence. I do remember the sequence where he's walking through and everything is kind of empty. In fact, that sequence of him walking through the empty streets right there kind of reminds me of the sequence in the opening of Day of the Dead, when one of the characters is trying to find food and he's walking around like empty streets. Yeah. Reminds me of that a little bit.
Yeah. But why? This one's so terrifying to me because I've lived in London for most of my life, and to find like that, like he's walking around like Westminster, Waterloo Bridge, and Piccadilly Circus. They're very populated areas. They're extremely populated areas. And to to see it completely empty is near to impossible. So
yeah,
it's kind of terrifying to see it that sort of deserted. But apparently what I can't remember the director's name.
Danny Boyle.
Apparently when they filmed that, I think they had to film it at like 2 a.m. on a Sunday or something. And that was the only time they could get it completely deserted.
They must have had put like many different permits or something like that to secure having that place be empty at that time of day. Because yeah, like you said, it'd be kind of like trying to close down downtown New York.
Yes.
Because it'd be just almost impossible to secure a table block for that. But I wonder too if they actually did just shoot like one particular block and then use digital effects to, I guess, expand it more. But I agree. It's a very brilliant sequence of that movie. I think it's the probably maybe only time where running zombies make sense, because they're not actually zombies. They are just people who are infected, and I will buy into that more of people being infected than The Walking Dead, because zombies don't fucking run.
Yeah, see, there's always going to be that argument of, is it a zombie film or not? I definitely agree with people when they say it's not a zombie film, but for some reason, I don't know, I've always seen it as one, even though...
Yeah.
It technically isn't, but I don't know. I've always kind of seen it as one. So the idea of running zombies is, for me, a lot of people find it a bit sort of silly. I find it terrifying because I can't run very fast at all. So
trust me, if zombies are running, I'm just dead. I'm like, all right, God damn it. Does that mean if I'm a zombie, I gotta run too? Is my whole afterlife gonna be just different runs or races my whole life? You know, I hear about all these like 5K runs and everything like that, and maybe these people who are doing the 5K runs, maybe they know something. Maybe they're like, we are preparing for a zombie apocalypse and we know how to run. And
yeah,
so I'm like,
about to happen.
But I don't want to run for my food, alright? I just, oh gosh. I hate that. If I'm a dead zombie right there, you know, I just want to just lounge around, you know. I want to be like Bub from the Day of the Dead, all right? I just want to be just listening to my records, play my phone right there. Once in a while, someone give me some brains. I mean, I just want the simple life, all right? That's all I want. Yeah. I want government-supplied food to my little chamber right there, because Bud had the life. Have you seen Day of the Dead?
Sorry?
Have you seen Day of the Dead?
I've only seen clips, but I know what you're referencing to.
Okay, good,
so
okay.
I do know what you're referring to.
Does Buddy have that, you know, he's hanging out there in the jail cell or whatever, you know, he's gonna be, he had headphones, you know, he had books.
No, he's happy.
Happy little zombie guy right there. That's the kind of zombie I would like to be, alright?
Yeah.
Comes a hero at the end. Alright, so that was a good one from 28 Days Later. Let's see now, we're up to my number 3. And yes, I'm going to do the opening of Wes Craven's Scream.
Yes, again, I was debating on putting this on my list, but I wasn't sure if you were going to have it as well. So, I thought not.
This sequence does a really good job of building suspense. I think this scene could be taught in a class of how to slowly and subtly build suspense, because in this sequence, Drew Barrymore's character, she's hanging out making popcorn, she does a phone call, and this guy at the other end starts asking her questions about movies and, you know, who she's with and all that thing. It starts off very playful kind. She thinks that he's flirting with her a little bit, and she's kind of enjoying that. Then it becomes kind of creepy when he asks her for her name.
Hello?
Why don't you want to talk to me?
Who is this? tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Uh-huh.
I only eat popcorn at the movies.
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Oh, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite scary movie?
I don't know.
You have to have a favorite. What comes to mind?
Halloween. You know, the one with the guy in the white mask who walks around and stalks babysitters?
Yeah.
What's yours?
Guess.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Is that the one where the guy had knives for fingers?
Yeah, Freddy Krueger.
Freddy, that's right. I like that movie. It was scary.
Wow, well, the first one was, but the rest sucked.
So, you got a boyfriend?
Why? You want to ask me out on a date?
Maybe. Do you have a boyfriend?
No.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
What did you say?
I want to know who I'm talking to.
That's not what you said.
What do you think I said? What? Hello?
Look, I gotta go.
Wait, I thought we were gonna go out.
Nah, I don't think so.
Don't hang up on me.
And she doesn't know where this is coming from. She has no clue where he is in this house or anything. She's all alone in this great big house out in the middle of nowhere, it seems. It's not so much the kill that happened that makes it memorable for me. It's the way that it kind of goes from being playful to dangerous to just downright horrifying. And it's all very subtle in its approach right there. And I think that is the masterful work of Wes Craven, along with writer Kevin Williamson, the way they're able to, like, blend that in. I think they would do it better than most other teen horror films. I'm looking at you. I know what you did last summer.
Yeah. I didn't even finish that film. I got 20 minutes into I Know What You Did Last Summer and switched it off. I'm sorry. You're I got bored.
No, my favorite sequence of I Know What You Did Last Summer wasn't in that movie, but it was parodied in Scary Movie.
I didn't even finish that one either.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. all the cliche stuff I've seen in other movies right there, yeah. I'm talking about the first Scary Movie. The first two Scary movies are actually pretty decent. You can not deal with the rest of them, but yeah.
It's not really my humor, to be honest.
That's totally fine. I agree.
I think I watched it quite too late as well, so I only watched it for the first time last year. So, I don't know.
It's very stupid humor. It's a very dumb movie. And I'm not going to defend it. It's a really lazily written movie. It's stupid. But damn it, I do laugh when I see that, all right?
Oh.
But yeah, that I got really nothing else to say about the screen moment there. I could have chosen maybe the theater sequence from the second one. That's good. The car sequence. In the second movie, there's a great sequence when Neve Campbell's character has to crawl out of a car that the killer is in. And she has to literally crawl through the window. And that is a great scene of suspense there. But I still think the opening of Scream 1 is iconic. And they're doing the same thing they did with the Janet Leigh character in Psycho. And they kill her off because at the time, Drew Barrymore was a big star. And so to have her to kill that way was pretty shocking for audiences in 96. And yeah, I think it's a really just brilliantly done film sequence right there. And that is why, is that my number three? So we are down now to your number three.
Okay, so, no, my number two. My number three
two,
was...
Duh. Sorry. Change that. Number two.
My number two is from 2004. This belongs to my favorite horror franchise. and it is from the first Saw. And it's when Dr. Gordon cuts his foot off.
Okay.
And what I find this one quite iconic because I remember when this one came out, I was about 12, 13 when this film came out. And I think this film, especially in sort of my sort of hometown, this film kind of started the whole, like, you know, cinemas need to have security outside, you know, the screens and to check the tickets and to make sure people under 18 weren't going into these films. Because I mean, the influence was Mad Max, like, and the idea behind, there was a scene in Mad, at the end of Mad Max, where a guy gets chained to a bomb and Max tells him, look, you can, you know, the bomb goes off in like 10 minutes. The only way you can get out is to saw your foot off. It will probably take you about 5 minutes and then you can run. Otherwise, you can stay there. And that's where this kind of sequence was influenced from. But I think apart from Mad Max, I don't think anything like this had kind of come around. Whereas the idea of, like, at the beginning of the film, Dr. Gordon, played by Cary Elwes, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, he's Wesley. Wesley from Princess Bride.
Yes. he actually gives the suggestion near the beginning of the film is that actually the killer, the Jigsaw killer, doesn't want these two people in this bathroom to cut through the chains that they're attached to. He wants them to cut through their feet. And usually at that point in horror films or in films, a character would have suggested something, would have tried all other options to get out of that situation. So they wouldn't have had to, you know, go through the one they suggested. Except in this film, where it gets near the end of the film and Dr. Gordon, he just panics. He goes into panic mode because he thinks his daughter and his wife are being shot. He's getting a phone call from them, but he thinks they're getting shot. So he goes into complete panic mode, takes his jacket off, ties it around his foot, puts the sleeve into his mouth and takes the saw that was near him and just starts cutting. And even though you don't see too much of it, again, like going back to, Let the Right One In, like that scene is allowing your imagination to connect the dots.
Because you hear sorry to cut you off there, but yeah, you hear the saw on the bone, everything like that, it goes through the flesh, and I find just the noise of things being sliced off more terrifying than actually seeing it.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of, what the films have become is more of a gore fest, but although Jigsaw kind of went back to what the first two films were, I think. But the first film I thought was just so good with that sort of, you know, you let your imagination run away with it, really, and let your imagination, you know, connect the dots with that scene. But also, I remember when that film came out, and again, like, there wasn't really anything else like that at the time, and especially again with the plot twist. The plot twist at the very end was one I was going to put down, but I thought this was more sort of iconic. But I remember, back in, like, secondary school, all of my friends being like, oh my God, have you seen this film? Yeah, he cuts his foot off and it's really gory and all this lot. So even around my school, it got sort of, you know, it got talked about. And it was quite... It was obviously quite big at the time because it's now spawned 8 films, but...
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the first one. I even kind of enjoyed the second one, and then after the third one, I'm like, all right, come on now. Just seriously, I mean, the first one, the movie's called Saw, and the guy uses a saw. I'm like, all right, that makes sense because it kind of plays on words. Saw, he's using the saw. We saw the horror of him using the saw. All right, I did it, all right? And all the different devices, and I'm like, wow. Now, spoiler alert, this Jigsaw character supposedly dies in, like, the third or second film, and yet he still is able to put together all these contraptions. And yeah. This guy obviously has a brilliant mind, but how in the world can he fake that he's dead and yet have the time to build all these contraptions there? Because these take some time. I'm sure he's got to be in an area where there's people around. There's got to be some sort of neighbors walking by. Somebody's got to hear this shit going on there. All right? Yeah. In fact, I want to see Jigsaw do like a home improvement show. I want to see Jigsaw like, hey folks, it's me Jigsaw here. We got a ways to switch up your house. Tired of like people coming to your home. Oh, what a guess. Maybe a mother-in-law you don't want. Well, yeah. Here, I've got these great devices here for you that will get rid of everything. And look, I'm going to be sponsored by ShamWow to clean up all those blood spills as well, all right? So, yeah, that's what I want to see.
Yeah, oh. Here's a new burglar alarm.
Yes. No. <Wild. laughs> Have you seen the recent Jigsaw movie?
I did, yeah. I quite enjoyed it, to be honest. Again, it sort of has its problem with the timeline, but it's very much, to me, it reminded me of what the first two were. Like, this one, it's got a few moments of gore, but it's not gore-fest like the later sequels were, which I quite liked. And, like, it does also, like, half the film is also, like, the investigation side of it. So I did like that it kind of went back to the beginning of what the franchise was. But I will say that the timeline of the whole franchise is ridiculous. Like, even I can admit that. Like, I love the franchise, but it's so convoluted and so all over the place. Like, some things, like, especially in the third film, like, I think the third film happens at the same time as the fourth one. And then the second one happened at the same time as something else. So...
Oh. I have a theory about this. I have a theory, Zombie Kitty. I may be wrong about this, though. Yeah. But maybe when they make the next Jigsaw movie, it'll be revealed that the killer is a Time Lord. The killer's Doctor Who. That's way he can go into different areas and... be at the same time. Yeah, I'm going to say right now, Jigsaw is a Time Lord. The new Jigsaw is going to be a Time Lord, alright? Just quote me on that, alright? I'm going to hold true to that.
I'll remember this.
Okay. But yeah, no, that's great. I do believe that sequence there with Cary Elwes, I think it was Danny Glover?
Yes.
Was that movie too? Yeah, great sequence. Yeah, I agree. Very iconic. Now, my second choice is going to be somewhat controversial because a lot of people don't consider it to be a horror film. Many people do consider it to be a horror film. And I think they say this because it did win the Academy Award for Best Picture in 1991. Yes, I am talking about Jonathan Demme's Silence of the Lambs, adapted from the book by Thomas Harris, starring Jodie Foster, Anthony Hopkins, Scott Glenn. The sequence I'm going to talk about is the moment when Clarice shows up at the house of Buffalo Bill. Now, Buffalo Bill is a guy known for taking the skin off of women. Murdering them, taking the skin off of them. She lists the help of Dr. Bill Hannibal Lecter. And in the sequence, she is showing up to this guy's house. Because she got this, tip from one of the victim's friends. And she shows up at this house. At around the same time, the FBI is showing up at the house of someone they know for a fact is the killer. Alright? Mm-hmm. And I love the sequence when they're getting ready to... the FBI is getting ready to bust into the doors and everything. And Clarice just randomly shows up at this house. And when they bust in, they see nothing's there. She opens the door, and we see, holy shit, it's the killer's face. She's actually there inside. And he invites her into the home, and she starts asking him questions. And I don't quite remember the line what that reveals him to be the killer, but he's suddenly caught, and he runs out. And the moment I'm talking about is when he shuts off all the lights, and yeah, she is in the dark and has no clue what is going on. And you just see that image of him wearing the night goggles. And he can see everything that she can see, but she can't see shit because it's a dark place. And she's lucky there, because there's a moment when he turns around and there's like a little stream of light and she just starts firing. But it's that whole moment when she's walking around feeling the walls, I find to be extremely terrifying, because you're stuck in the house of this crazed killer and you have no clue of where you are. You can't see anything around you. She's tripping over things right then and there. Yeah, I find that to be just terrifying. Every time I watch it and that lights come off, I'm like, holy shit, all right, it's down now. Yeah, I always have this fear of being in the dark with crazy psychopath killers that want to take off my skin and dance around to it. All right, I'm sorry. I might be weird, all right, but I still like that when that happens.
The moment you said Silence of the Lambs, I knew that was what you were going to pick.
Yes.
That scene is so terrifying. And especially when he stretches out his hand about to grab her.
Yes.
Just turn around, he's there.
I know, she just screamed out there, oh shit, just turn around, he's right there. But I thought that was just brilliantly captivated. And it's not done in a schlotzy sort of way. It's very true. It's using old school techniques right there. I just really enjoyed it. And I say it's controversial because people are like, Silence of the Lambs is not a horror film. I'm like, no, there's pretty horrifying things going on in that film, all right? I mean, you got the... Come on now. Hannibal Lecter wears another guy's face, all right? He cuts his face off and wears it on his face, all right? That's pretty freaking terrifying in and of itself, all right? There's, like, a lot of themes that go on in that movie, too, that are scary. And, yeah, just because something wins an Academy Award doesn't mean that... Actually, that one won several Academy Awards. It's probably the only time that a horror thriller won that many awards. And I don't think I've ever seen it happen since then. I hope it does, but, yeah.
I think that's an interesting sort of point you've just brought up as well, because especially with, like, for some reason, horror films that get really popular, a lot of people seem to think, or don't seem to call them horror films anymore. So, like, a recent example is the film Get Out, and that did really well. And then, for some reason, people stopped calling it a horror film. And yeah, start called a thriller, or I think it's a horror film.
It is a horror film.
It's definitely a horror film. But, yeah, like, again, like with Silence of the Lambs as well, just because it won an Academy Award of several awards doesn't make it a non-horror film. It's still a horror film.
People try to tell me that the Babadook wasn't really a horror film because of the great performance that Ezzie Davis did. They said it's more like a drama about a mother dealing with her son or problems with her deceased husband. I'm like, yeah, but there's some pretty horrifying monsters going on in that. I think anytime anything can, like, scare you or leave you with a little suspense right there, and it deals with, like, the supernatural, it's a horror film.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a horror film. Did you hear about, it was a while back now, Netflix accidentally labelled it as a gay film as well?
What, the Babadook?
Yeah.
A gay film?
They accidentally labelled it as a gay lesbian film, which then turned into... Basically, the Babadook is now apparently a gay icon.
Okay.
Which is the most weirdest thing.
I never picked that up from the movie at all. Wait, so is the Babadook woman? I don't know. Is like
no, it was literally just Netflix. Sometimes like they'll label a film as a genre that it's not at all. Like I've seen horror films that are labeled as like comedies or something when they're really not. And then for some reason, yeah, they just decided to label it as a gay lesbian film. I don't know if it still has that same label on Netflix. I'm not really sure. Or maybe they took it off because they realized their mistake. But I just thought that was really funny.
It would kind of like them like saying that, we see you late, Top Chef. Now, here's the recommendations. And they have on their terrible Holocaust.
Yeah.
And they have the Crypt of Thieves' Wife and their lover. No, I all right. That's that was my number two, the Clarice. When the Lights Go Out for Clarice, in Silence of the Lambs. Yeah, very good one. I think we're now we're to number ones. Our number ones of the of our most iconic horror films. Ba 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 ba. Music here. Ba 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 ba. What is your? What did the honorable mentions here? But what is your number one iconic horror film?
My number one is Final Destination 2, and it's the highway vehicle pileup.
Yes! Yay!
Now I want to bring something up. I think this is one of the weaker films in the franchise. It's not one I watch a lot of times. I don't really care about the characters. I don't think the deaths were too memorable. I don't know, overall, it's just not one I really enjoy when I watch it. But
it's got Tony Todd. It's got Candyman in there. Aww.
The first film had Candyman as well.
Okay, and fair enough. All right.
The opening premonition, I think, is so good because, again, it's like something that could happen. But also, like, people still remember it. Like, I'll give an example. I was being driven to, I think me and my parents and my sister were driving to another town nearby. And we had just gone onto the motorway, and we don't have those trucks with the logs connected to it or anything like that. But there was a truck that I think it had metal poles and like construction bits attached to it. And it was probably attached completely safely, but it didn't look like it looked very clumsily, you know, sort of piled on. And it was very similar to what that vehicle looks like in the second film. And it got in front of us. And me and my sister literally were just like, oh, Final Destination 2.
Oh, shit.
And I think that if you can have, if you have a scene in a film, or if you have a film where, you know, years later, people are still thinking about it and going, oh no, what if I do this, then this will happen, then I think you've done pretty well.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, it's been so long since I've seen this movie, but yeah, I really kind of enjoyed the sequence, and it's all just like a Rube Goldberg events right there. The tree smashing through the someone's car right there. Yeah, but the fact that you were in a car on the freeway there and that actually happened, was it pretty heavy? Was it like a lot of traffic going on?
Not really, no. There wasn't. It was fairly empty because I think it was like early morning, so it was before sort of rush hour, as it were. So it wasn't too bad, but yeah, it wasn't like that highway.
Okay, all right, good, all right. I mean, yeah, for some reason on that highway, from what I remember there were a lot of different stereotypical characters.
Yeah.
All on one road. Like,
yeah.
Very distinguished stereotypical characters that all happen to be on the same road. You got the prissy businesswoman, and I think there was a car of like stoners, you know, your basic metal stoners. And then there were our main characters who also had they always had like the token type of characters in there, and all happened to be on the same road at the same time. I was expecting a Shriners convention happening there. I was expecting Harlem Globetrotters. I was expecting the Scooby-Doo gang to be on that road. Right, yeah, I love it just the way that one sequence builds to another one. Like, one person I just lost later, and it fell into some oil, and that made a fire happen.
It's like a domino effect.
Yeah, like, one bad thing leads to another, and another, and another. Yep. And it's very ridiculous things, too. It's very comical. It's like when the Wile E. Coyote mates a contraption to kill the Roadrunner,
yeah,
and it goes through everything, and then it backfires and ends up killing the coyote there. That's what these movies remind me of. They remind me of like live action Looney Tunes.
Yes, I don't think I've ever heard anyone compare it to that before, to be honest.
It's the way. If you were to switch the music around and play some sort of like merry-go-round broke-down song from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, or even put the Benny Hill theme song music,
yes,
it becomes somewhat comical. Replace all of the realistic sounds with like boings and then like springs breaking, cartoon sound effects, this could very well be in the same canon as a lot of Looney Tunes, because Looney Tunes have like a lot of violence, but we don't think they're violent because they're played whimsically. Is that a word? Whimsical.
Yeah, whimsical music.
Very much that type of style right there. If you were to do some tweets with the edits and mainly the sound effects. The sound effects is the one that you want to switch around, and then it becomes this laugh fest. But maybe I just have a sick mind. and I apologize about that, alright?
No, I was going to say, I know what I'm doing with the rest of my day.
Okay. Watching Looney Tunes?
Or... Yeah.
Nice. Well, anything more you want to say about the Final Destination 2?
Not really. That's all I have to say about my number one.
Okay. Now, for my number one, I am going to go with a scene from probably one of the most iconic horror films of all time. But I'm not going to do the one that many people expect that I'm going to do. I'm choosing the film Psycho from 1960, Alfred Hitchcock movie, probably one of the first slasher films, not counting Peepin' Tom, but definitely one of the first movies that really shocked audiences. I mean, I'm sure people were shocked by, well, I say Night of the Living Dead, but that came out years later, actually. But no, people were shocked by this movie because the whole movie focuses on Janet Leigh's character, and she embezzles this money, and she's on her way to join her boyfriend somewhere. She stops at a hotel, and she meets the caretaker there, and she knows that he has an overbearing mother, but she doesn't think too much of it. Now, I'm not talking about the shower sequence, because that's been talked to death already. There's been several movies about it. No, the moment that really kind of like, I wouldn't say terrified me, but it did make me feel suspense, was the moment after the shower sequence when Norman Bates is cleaning up after his mother, because that's what good boys do. They clean up after their mother's homicidal rampages, and he's gathering everything up you know, of Marianne Crane's, Janet Leigh's character. He puts her body into the trunk of her car, and he decides to push the car into the swamp. Well, there is a moment in there when the car starts sinking, and then it stops. And he's looking around, and it's at this moment, I am now inside, I'm with the Anthony Perkins character. Before, we were following Marion Crane around, and we became sort of like, she was our avatar, alright? And we're kind of seeing things through her perspective. When that car started to sink, and it stops, and Norman Bates is looking around, I got a sense of dread. I'm like, holy shit, they're going to catch him. I'm concerned now. Wait, yeah. This guy is basically kind of a, well, spoiler alert if you don't know there, this guy is, you know, a killer there. But just that moment of him trying to, I guess, hide this crime, I think that is like a brilliant moment of switching audiences' perspective from one character to another. And that is why it's on my list as my number one.
That's quite an interesting pick, actually. I didn't expect you to pick that. I thought you were going to pick the ending scene where Norman Bates is sitting in the, well, is it the mental hospital? And he's sort of just talking to himself.
That's a good one, too.
And smiles.
No, that's a good one, too. That's one where you know the mother persona character has fully taken over. And Norman is completely gone. I love the whole monologue that, you know, he gives. And I think it's brilliant. But at that moment when the car starts sinking and stops, I become, like, fully engaged with the character. Like, holy shit, I don't want this guy to get caught. Holy shit, car sink. I don't want this guy. And it's weird because this guy should be caught because he's, even if it was another person, because remember now, when this movie came out, you had no idea that Norman Bates was the killer. But even so, even if you didn't know if he was the killer or just helping someone out, the fact that you're hoping he gets away with it, I found to be very terrifying.
Yeah.
And it just kind of changed his perspective there, because at first, beginning of the movie there, you're following Marion Crane around, she's stealing money, we know it's wrong. And we want her to do the right thing. She does do the right thing. And then she gets killed for it, though. And yes, I know I could have easily talked about the shower sequence, about there was no real blood and all the different cuts. And every time a stab happened, a cut happens, all that other things that happened in that movie. But it was just that moment when perceptions are changed. Mm-hmm. And I find that to be really kind of a terrifying thing.
I think it's more terrifying, not because of what's going on, but I feel like it's terrifying because your mind is going along with the villain this time around instead of the good person.
Yeah.
Instead, like, you're more terrified by yourself and by your thinking. Because you're now, like you said, you're now going, I want this guy to get away with it. I don't want this guy to get into trouble. And then it's kind of, you kind of stop and think, hang on, he just killed someone.
Yeah. This is not right. Why am I worried if he just caught or not?
Yeah.
And that's just one of the brilliant things that Hitchcock does. And I don't think there's ever been a movie since then where you do, you follow one character, they become like our main character, and then he has it switch to another one. And now you're in that character's shoes, following them around.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was just a brilliant thing. I haven't seen it done since then. And that is why it is my number one. I got nothing to say there. Any other honorable mentions for you?
I have a few. So.
Okay.
I have, probably have about four,
okay.
If that's all right. I've got the opening scene in the 1990s It with Georgie.
Okay.
I got The Sixth Sense when Haley Joel Osment's character whispers to Bruce Willis, "I see dead people."
Okay, yeah, good one.
I've got in Child's Play, I can't remember who the character was, but it's when I think it's Andy's babysitter or his aunt or something, like, holds up the Chucky doll and, like, sees that the doll has no batteries, and she's like, "Talk, goddammit, talk," and then it comes to life.
Oh, yeah, it spins round, yeah.
It's out on her. I think that one was quite funny, but, like, you knew it was going to happen at some point. You're just waiting for it to happen. And the last one I've got is, I personally think it's iconic, but I don't know. I've got the introduction of the truck in Jeepers Creepers 1.
Okay.
But yeah, those are my ones. Those are my sort of honorable mentions.
Those are good ones. Those are definitely good ones here. Some of my honorable mentions, I like the two twin girls in The Shining.
Yeah.
Where he dad ran the bicycle, it turns the corner, and then you see the two girls saying, "Come play with me," and then it cuts to scenes of them being mutilated there. I think the end sequence of Carrie, where blood gets sprayed on her, and jumps all those, like, split-screen techniques right there. I really enjoyed that one a lot. There's a movie called Eyes Without a Face.
Yeah.
Where it actually does show a face being removed. And I gotta say, for the times that was made there, that was a pretty graphic one. Yeah, that's Misery, when Eddie Wilkes puts the block.
Yeah.
And cuts off his foot, or not cuts off it, but basically breaks his foot hardcore right there. It's the only ones I can think of. I do like, what time are we here? Oh yeah, in Ginger Snaps, basically the scene when Ginger, I guess, this is not really a horrifying scene, but it's the moment when Ginger kills, I guess, the principal and the principal's office right there. I found that to be good. Also, the last sequence of that movie, I find it to be terrifying. Ginger Snaps 2, when you find out the reveal of the little blonde girl's motivations, I found to be kind of terrifying as well. I love the Ginger Snaps movies. Those are, like, one of my favorite movies of all time. Yeah, that's that is kind of it right now for my... Oh, I was going to mention, too, in the original Amityville Horror, when the priest comes in and the house says to get out. Terrifying. Yeah. Fucking just scares the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I love that voice right there. I just... Oh, I have a hard time watching that movie now because of just that voice, because it starts as quietly get out and then yells get out. I'm like, fuck this. All right, I'm done.
Yep, I'm getting there. I'm done.
Oh, I also mentioned too in the Omen, the tricycle sequence when Damien puts his mother off. Also mentioned too the whole fair and it's all for you, Damien. There are also other moments in movies that were not so much a horror film, but they still brought suspense. And one sequence I say does very well was in The Lost World, Jurassic Park, when the T-Rex, basically, there's like this like Winnebago camper that just flipped over a cliff, and everyone lands on this glass, especially Julianne Moore. She's landing on the glass, and the glass starts to break a little bit. I know it's not such a horror film, but there are monsters in there.
I mean, that scene was so tense as well, because it goes on for so long. You're just like, come on, get out of there, get out of there.
Just that little that seeing that glass break and she's out, very, very high. I don't know, I like that kind of subtle things there that happen. It's a small thing, But then your mind starts racing, like, oh shit, the glass is just cracked a little bit. It's gonna break. Just that shit right there always works for me. So sometimes less is more when it comes to horror films. You don't really need to be super graphic with your horror, I guess, to make it a horror film. And I know people that, you know, they're big gore hounds, they love the gore, and hey, that's great. You know, I'm a big fan of John Carpenter's The Thing. That's got some great gore elements there. There's some great kills in the Nightmare on Elm Street series. I get it. But sometimes, if you really want to scare an audience, you don't need to show them every little thing there. Let their mind race a little bit, and you'll have a much more successful film, and because people want to come back to it more. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Like, I'm a bit of both. Like, I'm a bit of a gore hound as well. Like, give me gory horror films and I'm happy as well. Yeah. But I also do like some of those films where, again, the film lets your imagination run away with it, really. And like, it doesn't give you everything, but it gives you sort of implications. Like, I like a bit of a sort of a mixture of those horror films.
Yeah. So, do you have I want to say that's going to wrap up our list right there. I want to thank you again, Zombie Kitty, for being on the show. What do you have coming up on your site, your show? Let the listeners know what to expect, and also tell us where we can find you.
Tomorrow's episode is actually going to be on The Seed of Chucky.
Oh, nice.
Which I watched a few days ago, actually. I've now seen all the Chucky films, so that was kind of the last one I needed to watch. And it was kind of the point where, like, this is ridiculous. I think I should talk about this.
Yep.
Yesterday I put up a written review for the film Would You Rather? This is a horror film from 2014, which is currently on Netflix. It reminds me a bit of, like, if you like the Saw films, but also if you like sort of the tension and the atmosphere of 10 Cloverfield Lane, then I think you would like this film as well. It is a bit gory, but I still think it's quite a good sort of film. It still keeps that sort of tension going, and you're always sort of wanting to know what's going to happen next. But I'd recommend that one. For next week, I've possibly got a few fan films. I'm looking at a couple at the moment that I'm going to be doing. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I would definitely look forward to that. And I guess tell listeners, too, where we can find you on social media and all the platforms.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter, which is at ZKittyPodcast. I'm also on SoundCloud and on iTunes. And I've also got a website, which is zombiekittypodcast.wordpress.com.
All right, yes, definitely check that out. Check out our podcast. Check out her written articles. Really good stuff right there. I can't praise her show more enough right there. She's really good. I want to thank you tremendously for being on the show. For the Cinema Recall podcast, we are not done with the horror conversation, folks, because next week we're bringing on from the site Zobo with a Shotgun, Zoe Rose Smith. We're going to be talking about our most disturbing horror movie sequences in movies, and that'll happen next week for Terror Tuesdays. As always, you can listen to our show. We are on iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, Player FM. We are on Twitter. We are at @Cinema_Recall on Twitter. On Facebook, just type in Cinema Recall. As always, all of our episodes are on the site of thatmomentin.com. Again, Zombie Kitty, thank you so much for being on the show. Would you come back to us?
Sorry, say that again?
I was saying thank you for being on the show. Would you come back to us?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me as well.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, we're going to say goodnight to you all. If you agree with our list or disagree with our list, you know, maybe you had some movies that we didn't mention, please let us know. But yeah, that's going to wrap up everything right now. Again, everybody, have a good night, and we will see you later. All right.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.